Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Russ Conroy. As part of a cancer network around the practice program, Dr. Misako Nakasaka of the University of California, Irvine, spoke about sequencing immunotherapy and chemotherapy for patients with lung cancer, as well as the importance of multidisciplinary care at her clinic. She also discussed the FDA approval of pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy in resectable non-small cell lung cancer, and how she plans to implement this regimen into her practice. Other topics of conversation included the initiation of the Phase 2 Paloma 2 trial, investigating subcutaneous amivantamab for patients with EGFR-mutated non-small cell lung cancer, as well as other next steps for research. The interview questions have been re-recorded for audio clarity. What are the current treatment sequencing options for lung cancer?
Sure. Well, that would depend on stage. Assuming that we're talking about advanced metastatic stage, I would like to know the molecular biomarkers. Does the patient have EGFR, ALK, or what is the PD-L1 status? And then start there. In patients who do have a molecular target, I would like to use targeted therapy up front. And then if they do not have a target, I would be looking at the PD-L1 score. And if high and the tumor burden isn't that much, I would start with single agent immunotherapy. If not, I would be doing chemotherapy and immunotherapy.
Can you speak to the importance of multidisciplinary care in this space?
Oh, absolutely. I think MDT care is everything. Especially now that we have more and more data coming out in the neoadjuvant and adjuvant space, I think it's really important in all patients, not just advanced metastatic stage, but even in early stage patients, that we talk about what their best approach would be. So in patients that are diagnosed, that are newly diagnosed, as a way for introduction at our institution, usually the pulmonology team, when they biopsy someone and comes back as lung cancer, they present the case at our tumor board, and then we talk about the different scenarios that the patients could take, and we talk about the advantages and the disadvantages of each approach. So really important to have that discussion early on. And sometimes, even if the patient didn't qualify for surgery up front, now that we have better and better treatment that are coming out, I've had times where, you know, I've had our surgeons take the patient to surgery for residual disease resection. And I think that's also an approach that we can use as well. So really doesn't matter what stage, it's really important to have that multidisciplinary type of care.
Looking forward, how do you hope to see the field evolve in the next 5 years?
So that is a great question. With more potent treatment options that are becoming available to our patients, I really hope that in the next 5 years, we have more and more patients that we're able to put into remission or even cure, even in the advanced or metastatic stage. I also am really interested in trying to find these patients at an earlier stage because, as you know, the lung cancer screening program is only for patients who have smoked at some point in their life, and patients who have the mutations like EGFR or ALK, they tend to be never or light smokers, and they don't really qualify to the traditional screening criteria. So somehow coming up with a program to help these patients, to find these patients early on, I think is going to be key, and I hope that happens in the next 5 years.
The FDA approved neoadjuvant pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy for resectable non-small cell lung cancer. How will you begin to implement this into your practice?
Sure. So it's really exciting to be a thoracic oncologist because every time I look around, there's a new approval that comes around. It's really good. So the data I thought was really interesting, and it really complements what we had and what we didn't have. Because as you know, We did have the CheckMate 816 data that was for neoadjuvant chemoimmunotherapy. And then we also had KEYNOTE-091, which was adjuvant pembrolizumab. And we also had IMpower-010, which was adjuvant atezolizumab. So we really didn't have clinical trial-based data on what would happen if patients were given neoadjuvant followed by adjuvant. So the new approval is really exciting to us. And it wasn't just the disease-free survival that interested me. That study, I think the most important curves were probably the Kaplan-Meier curves that showed patients who had a path CR or who didn't. And regardless of what you get, it appears that having a path CR or having a good response to neoadjuvant treatment really dictates how they do afterwards. So having a clinical trial that has that sort of data, combine neoadjuvant and adjuvant use is really important. So I will start to look for patients who might benefit from this setting, and I will start to use this program once I find a patient.
What was your biggest takeaway from the discussion with your colleagues today?
So today I really enjoyed having my two esteemed colleagues, Dr. Ignatius Hu. He is my colleague and mentor, so he is the thoracic oncology colleague. And then I also had Dr. Janellen Smith, who is our derm oncologist, and we all work together. And as a matter of fact, with Dr. Wu, I share clinic 3 days out of the week, and with Dr. Smith, I share clinic 2 days out of the week. So, like, we really work side by side, and we share a lot of patients. There's patients that come up, and I have questions I can ask Dr. Wu. There's all sorts of random rash that occur that I take a picture and I just send it to Dr. Smith and be like, hey, can you please see the patient? What should I do in the meantime? So I think we were able to share what we do in clinic during our discussion today. And that was really key. I think really the key message, especially for dermatologic adverse events, is that for the most part, you can continue patients on their cancer treatment while co-managing patients with the dermatology team. So I think it's really important to send that message out that by working together, we can have patients stay on treatment for a longer period of time with better quality of life. And that's really important.
Are you currently involved in any research that you would like to highlight?
I am very lucky to be in an institution where I have the backup and support to be able to open many clinical trials, including first-in-human and early-phase studies. So I have many studies that I find interesting. As a matter of fact, I open them because I think that they're going to be interesting, right? And so for the topic that we talked about today, for the amivantamab, we are opening Paloma 2, which is basically the subcutaneous version of amivantamab, and it will be the first time for me with getting experience for that version of amivantamab. And I'm very excited because from preliminary data that I've seen, I've been told that the adverse events rates are decreased, and that's really important for patients. For my little investigator-initiated type of thing, I am trying to identify the correlation between gut microbiome and the responses, as well as severity and prevalence of adverse events in patients who are receiving care for their lung cancer treatment. And I know there's a lot of data that's coming out in the melanoma field in regards to immunotherapy and gut microbiome, but what I want to see in this study that I opening as an investigator-initiated study is, are there any differences in the microbiome in, for example, people who have more diarrhea with a TKI? And I think by defining the changes that occur with treatment, we may be able to intervene early and prevent or manage these side effects.
Dr. Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology On The Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available, or listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology On The Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancer-network.